I don't know.
I think Gaddy is hosting today.
Ready?
Am I actually?
Gaddy can host today because I'm ill.
Can you not say like, what's going on, everybody?
I can say it.
I mean, that's all you do anyway.
Oh. Power's gone to his head already.
Boo. 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 Boo.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of League Pass and Chill. Zion Williamson is going to be a Pelican, guys. I'm Olga Nulich. I write about basketball for Fox Sports Australia. I am joined by Gadi Natalovitz. He does the same thing.
Hi.
Ted Smith and Harrison Pullinger also here. They make videos for our website. It's a very exciting kind of moment because the draft lottery was freaking intense and both conference finals look like... It looks like we're going to have a Bucks Warriors finals if we're not speaking too early, which we definitely are because that's how this podcast works.
Yeah.
How are you guys?
We're good.
I'm good.
It's been a long day.
Aw.
Yeah.
All right.
That's all.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted to say.
I'm okay.
Gadi complained because he had like a bit of extra work to do. Ted literally has a hole in his shoulder.
Yeah.
Wait, but did Ted have the extra work to do?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, Ted.
No, yeah, you're right. I've just got 9 hours of work to do after this podcast.
Fair.
But we collectively digress. How do we feel? How do we feel about Zion playing at the Pelks?
I don't know yet.
The place where superstars go to get lost.
Ooh, it's a bit tough.
Is it tough?
Yeah, it's tough, but it can also be true.
You go there and not make the playoffs, and if you do, you get knocked out of the first round, which is the same thing Anthony Davis and Chris Paul did.
They got a sweep last year,
and then you get traded.
Yeah, look, that's
that's bleak.
We're gonna go on a more positive note. We're gonna touch on Zion and the draft lottery a bit later,
because
that was so much fun to just be a part of. You know, let's start with the conference finals where. Today, we're recording this on a Sunday. The Warriors just beat the Blazers to take a 3-0 lead in that series. And it very well looks like the Warriors are about to go to a fifth straight finals on the back of Stephen Curry. They do look like they're playing better without Kevin Durant. I'm not saying they're better without him. Settle. It seems as though they're playing better without him. Dame and CJ are not playing that well. Is this who amongst us picked Warriors in four?
I think it was me and Ted.
And then Harrison and I had Warriors in five, right?
Yeah.
So Trailblazers got to get one, right?
Look, they very well could get one, but...
If the game ended at halftime, they'd have, what, two?
Yeah. The thing is, now that it's 3-0, it's really hard to see the Blazers come out and do anything to stop the Warriors in game four. Like, they've had it. They had that halftime lead in game two. They had a big third quarter lead in game two. They had the halftime lead in game three. They had a big third quarter lead in game three, and they blew it on both occasions. So if they couldn't get those two games done, then I don't see how they come out 3-0 down in the Western Conference Finals and do anything in Game 4.
So like if they couldn't have the will to step up and, you know, close out today's game where they were up 18, then, you know, what are the chances they're going to have? They're going to be able to do that away from home and then at home and then away from home again.
So beat right. mentally, right?
Right.
Like, because after you lose that close game too, it's like, well, we have to beat the Warriors four times. In the next, what, six games?
Yeah, it's scary.
Because for them, at this point, right, they're not even thinking about beating the Warriors over a series. They're
exactly.
going like, can we even beat them once? And once you're doing that, then it's game over, in my opinion. I mean, the only thing they can hope for is that the Warriors come out even slower than they have had, thinking that the series is wrapped up and they still won in game four. But, I mean, the longest this series is going is five, and the Warriors have shown once again... Even without KD, just how much better they are than pretty much everyone else in the West, which is scary.
Yeah. 30 from 31 now. That's how many times the Warriors have won when Steph has played and KD hasn't since KD came over from OKC. So I'm not great at maths, but that's a pretty good winning percentage.
Very good winning percentage.
And it suggests that they're even without KD, they're still the best team in basketball by a long way.
Do you think so? Yeah. I feel like we're going to find that out next series.
Well, we might not because KD will be back.
I think KD will play.
Okay.
You look at And like they're playing in this series, and yeah, okay, it's the talent pool is just so different. But like the doubling on the low post and trying to trap Lillard and McCollum almost near the halfway line, it seems pretty sloppy to me. Like it's working in this Portland series, but you can't really do that and leave Malcolm Brogdon, Chris Middleton, Brooke Lopez, Mirotić standing on the 3-point line like they're letting Al-Farouq Aminu and Mo Harkless do that. So then it means you're going to need to go to a more one-on-one defensive pattern, which we have seen doesn't really work against Giannis. So I think next series is going to be way more interesting if Milwaukee do go through. But I just cannot get excited about this series at all.
No.
I think the defensive scheme changes when it comes time to play the Bucks. Like they won't be trapping guards and like in the half court.
No, absolutely. But they were even doubling in the low post, which do probably need to do against Giannis. But it's where does that double come from when the other four guys can all shoot?
Yeah.
Unlike Portland, which have Mo Harkless airballing wide open threes and Al-Farouq Aminu just, I don't know, existing.
Yeah, for me, like this Portland series, as much as the role players haven't exactly stepped up, the problem's been the Blazers backcourt. Over three games, they have 123 points combined. Curry has 109. If you have CJ and Dame combining for 14 more points over three games, that's your problem. If your two best players are both backcourt players, they can't perform worse than the opposing team's backcourt for you to win that series. And they've been outplayed by Curry and by Klay Thompson. So I mean, like that's where the problem starts and finishes. If Dame and CJ weren't going to be the best players in this series, they weren't going to win. Haven't been.
Yeah, for me, Draymond Green has been like the obvious difference maker, and the dude who's stepped up. It's you can say that Steph Curry has stepped up, you know, immensely since KD went down. But I feel like that person is actually Draymond Green.
Yeah,
because his ability just to control the pace on both ends of the floor, it's just like he's almost unstoppable. Like he's been one of the most dominant players in the postseason.
I'd love to say the most amount of alley-oop assists in a playoff series.
Oh, he's easily like the best like short roll like alley-oop passer like maybe in history. It's just it's just crazy how often he's able to get that pass up, right?
He's as much of a point guard for that team as Steph Curry is.
Oh, totally. And Guardy and I talk about this too. Sometimes he goes haywire. Sometimes he'll get the board and go coast to coast and be like, mine.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work out. But no, on defensively, just the way he's been able to lock up whomever's in front of him, that's been incredible. And then that'll obviously be important the next series, whomever they face, either as a one-on-one defender or as like a help defender. And then obviously also don't count out Kevon Looney. I know it's a weird sentence, but him as like a help defender and the dude on the receiving end of Draymond alley-oops, like he's been really good on both ends. He could make a difference in the next series too.
On Looney, did he get many minutes? I'm putting your feet to the fire here, in that Bucks win over the Warriors at Oracle at the start of the year, because the Bucks scored 80-odd points in the paint in that game.
If memory serves me right.
They did. The Bucks scored over 80 points just in the paint in that game. So that's going to be interesting, almost to what you were saying, Harrison, that they're going to have to change their defense. But what do they do? Like you can't stop Giannis inside.
Looney as a help defender, he has to travel a long way to get out to a Brook Lopez three, because as soon as Lopez catches it, he's just letting it fly at the moment. So it's like, is he really going to be able to drop as much as he can when you probably want, I don't know, Durant marking the center?
See, perhaps.
Draymond on Giannis?
I'm thinking, do the Warriors just do what they did today and just trap the two best players and let Myers Leonard shoot a whole bunch of threes? I know Myers Leonard is not Brook Lopez, but Myers Leonard hit three-pointers today like he was Brook Lopez. So it's the sort of thing, do you just let the others beat you and make sure that you stop the others just whenever you can?
But trapping Giannis
is impossible.
Is different.
And
it's like trapping Thanos. Good luck.
Yeah, it is. Look, we can like kind of speculate on what the Warriors are going to do with the Bucks. As you said, though, neither series is over. I will say, just going back on Draymond quickly, you were talking about like who's really stepped up in Kevin Durant's absence. While Steph's been like the obvious thing that's kept them like ticking along, because I mean, without him, they don't have the scoring to beat another basketball team essentially. Yeah. But what Draymond's done and what like everyone's been commenting on is how like seamlessly the Warriors have transitioned back to the OG Warriors, like the 2015 Warriors. And yes, they have a bunch of pieces that still exist from that team, but he's been, I would say, the guiding influence in taking those guys that weren't there and making it so that they just fit in right. Like, they can step in, whether it's McKinney or Jordan Bell or Damian Jones, who's been getting minutes in the Western Conference Finals, which feels kind of like an insult. We're gonna start Damian Jones on the road in the Western Conference Finals, and we're still going to win, which just seems disrespectful. But
Andre Iguodala had stepped up in a big way. He's getting an MRI on his lower leg tomorrow, so like, I guess we'll see if that's anything serious. If it is, that's a massive blow.
Big time.
On both ends.
Yeah. But he barely played today.
He didn't play today. And then with him not playing much, Alphonso McKinney just stepped up, grabbed 9 rebounds, a few big offensive rebounds. Mm. So they just have guys who step up.
Yeah.
And if they can have that, someone like McKinney can hit those corner threes too, that's almost a wrap.
Yeah, that's a testament to the Golden State coaching staff as well, getting these players coached up.
Absolutely.
And being mentally ready to step up and provide meaningful stats in big games. Steve Kerr, because the team's so good that he's assembled, we sleep on how good of a job he's done with some of these players that at some stages of the season. Same like Debas, they carry on a bit, right?
Mm.
The fact that he can continuously get this team ready at the right time of the year, not just the stars, the whole squad.
You got to think one of the superstar or star players on the Warriors is humble across the board. And that's Klay Thompson, right? Steph Curry is like a great person off the court. On the court, if you're on an opposing team, he's a pest, right? He's shimmying in front of you. He's making fun of you while he's hitting the most ridiculous shots. Draymond Green yells after every possession on both ends of the floor. Kevin Durant is the pettiest superstar in the world. But Steve Kerr has to have some credit for making sure this team hasn't collapsed.
Yeah.
There were points where they have, suffered somewhat of a downfall, but they're probably about to go to a fifth straight finals. That's big ups to Steve Kerr for that.
That's so kind of you to say, probably. Portland fans are
The other thing is, I just want to touch on that point about like the Warriors being able to depend on their like bench unit and stuff. Interestingly enough, the two teams that have probably gone the deepest in their rotations throughout the playoffs are probably going to meet in the NBA Finals. Like, the Milwaukee Bucks have gone 10-11 deep throughout the playoffs, as have the Warriors. So that like conventional wisdom of like, nah, you take your 7 or 8 and you play your best guys doesn't always pan out. Giannis, I mean, we'll get to the Bucks Raptors series, but Giannis has been barely playing like 32, 33 minutes a game, and they've lost one game so far in the Eastern Conference playoffs, which is ridiculous.
Onto that series. It's 2-0 to the Bucks as of the recording of this podcast. I'm a person who thinks that the Raptors are a good, deep team with a superstar who you can trust, right?
I've always said that Olga Nulich, he's a guy that...
Okay. shut up.
The kind of person that believes the Raptors can turn it around.
We do this every time, though, where a team wins two home games, one of them was a very close game, and we just write off an entire series. Like, do we think the Raptors have it in them, Harrison, to push this to a game 5 where it's potentially tied up?
I can't see it being tied 2-2 when we leave Toronto, but I would be absolutely shocked if Toronto don't come out at the firing in game 3 at home. And if they can put together a like 8-12 point win, then that makes you look ahead to game 4 and go, okay, like maybe this is more of a series than we think it is. But what Guardy was saying is they're going deep, is they're getting such good output from the bench when the Raptors just aren't. They wasted Kyle Lowry's one good game in the playoffs. And they're not getting much from anyone else. They're not getting that offensive rebound performance that Serge Ibaka gave. They're not getting those open threes that Brook Lopez is hitting from Marc Gasol.
Yeah.
They need those things to make this a game and to make this a series.
To extend on that, George Hill and Ilyasova combined for 30 points the last game.
They've been really good off the
bench,
playoffs.
Yeah, off the bench. Yeah. Off the bench, sorry. And Kyle Lowry went for 15. And he's like, after the first series, we thought Siakam was their second best player. Lowry's probably been their second most important player in the conference finals. So, yeah, the bench is playing better than their starters as well. Some of these games. I think Kawhi Leonard's too good to get swept. He'll win at least one game on his own back for Toronto. If he can get help in, because I agree with Harrison, I think it'll be the next game. He needs help in game four if they're going to do it. But on Kawhi Leonard, his stat line's very similar from game to game. But if you play hard defense on him, he struggles in the fourth quarter. His stat line will look the same. It'll look like he was just effective, except I think it was game two where he only had 2 points in the fourth quarter. So if that continues, if the Bucks keep on rocking up and putting hands in Kawhi's face, then I don't think he can carry them for more than one game. So, Raptors, the rest of the Raptors need to step up if this is going to go more than five games.
I feel like I slightly have a vested interest here because I kind of called at the start of the series. I thought it was going to be a bit more comfortable for the Bucks than a lot of people thought. So like I kind of do see this heading back maybe to Milwaukee at 3-1. I don't know. It'd be hard to see them actually sweeping Toronto. But like we were just talking about Kyle Lowry. Like game one, 30 points, 10 of 15 from the field, hit 7 threes. And, like, I get it. He plays basketball that helps his team win. Little things that don't show up in the box score. Offensive rebounds that do show up in the box score, but, like, people don't seem to notice and stuff. I get all that. I do. But at the end of the day, like, bloke's getting paid a whole lot of money. And as a point guard, you've got to, like, sometimes take over the game. You've got to sometimes say, we need a bucket. I'm going to go get a bucket. And for me, for a player that makes, what, $30 million a year or something?
Kyle Lowry.
Yeah. Isn't he on like the...
I'll tell you in 2 seconds, man. Yeah, he's $31
million. Right. For a guy that's getting that much money, I just don't think he steps up enough. And like we've gotten to this weird place where like people get upset when you criticize him because they're like, no, he's really underrated. But it's also like, but he's not even doing like the bare minimum at the moment.
Yeah. It's like all that's good. Well, he'll get the odd offensive rebound, but give me Steph.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm thinking if Kyle Lowry was like 15 pounds lighter, would we automatically assume that he's doing all the intangibles? I feel like we just get that assumption because he's a bulldog and
right.
he's like the stocky Derek Fisher kind of guy.
But it's also getting to the point where because he's doing almost nothing tangible, like to the point where like if he has a game where he puts up 15, you're like, oh, well, he must have been doing other things because then what? Like,
he must have got a few deflections. Huh?
This is a guy who's been an all-star in his career. Like, I don't know. I feel like he's just gone backwards in the past couple of years. At the same time, though, this Bucks team is the same Bucks team, essentially, obviously different coach, couple roster changes, that finished in the seventh seed last year and left and got eliminated in the first round. And yet they go down and you just don't ever sense any panic from them. Like, it doesn't actually make sense that they're this good in the playoffs this year in 2019.
Yeah, their bench has been extremely helpful, having veterans like George Hill, Edison Ilyasova, just those two as the core of a bench.
Yeah.
And then having energy dudes like Pat Connaughton and like those type of guys, they can help you win games.
Mm.
Chris Middleton's hitting shots that I don't think we realized he could hit.
Yeah.
And Giannis is looking like a superstar. It's weird that we thought, oh, LeBron's left the East. Now the East is wide open. And then just Giannis comes in as just this new unstoppable force. It's really not fair.
Yeah, he's kind of closed the door on the East already. Like, it's pretty weird. Much. You've got Brogdon as well stepping up. Bledsoe has had a pretty bad series. Like, yeah. He hasn't been able to score the basketball at all. And while Middleton's made some big shots, he's not putting up the usual production, but he's guarding Kawhi Leonard. And they're able to say to him, make that your focus. Let's keep Kawhi to 30 points a game. I know that's a lot, but let's keep him to around 30 points a game. And we still get offense from Ersan Ilyasova coming off the bench, from George Hill, from Malcolm Brogdon, from Brook Lopez. Like, they have a bunch of guys that are scoring the ball. They're a pretty scary prospect.
Yeah, which is crazy because if you just look at the roster, right, you take Giannis out of it, you're like Mirotić, Lopez, Bledsoe, Middleton, there's a chance they go to the finals of the NBA with one loss, right? Again, Mirotić, Lopez, Bledsoe, Middleton, right? That's crazy.
Yeah.
But it's just a smart coach with a smart GM being like, we have our piece, let's build around him appropriately, you know. But before we move too far away from Kyle Lowry, I'll say this. He's on $31 million this year. Lillard, 27. You could almost have three Kemba Walkers who was only earning $12 million this year.
Wait, could they all be stacked on top of each other? Because that might actually be unstoppable.
After a timeout.
What are our out-of-bounds play? Kemba inbounding to two Kembas.
Kemba Megatron. Given that the only thing you can rely on about Kyle Lowry is that he'll be inconsistent in the playoffs, that's the only thing you can depend on.
Is that in his LinkedIn bio?
Up until this series where he had a strong game one, you could depend on him having a really weak game one as well. Yeah. So, look, I enjoy that he's a scrappy player, but is he good enough to help Kawhi Leonard win an NBA title? Probably not, and that could hurt Toronto's chances of keeping one Kawhi Leonard for the border as well.
I feel like what's happened already has kind of closed that door. Like, Kyle Lowry's proven he's nowhere close to being the second man. And Pascal Siakam, who showed maybe he was turning into that, has come up pretty small as well.
Guess how old he is as well, Kyle Lowry? Too much Kyle Lowry chat on
He's that. Old now, isn't he? He's what?
33.
33, yeah. Really? I was going to say 32.
Yeah.
He doesn't get nearly the amount of criticism as he should.
No.
Like, he gets a bit, but nowhere near
Because he does things people like he tries heaps hard.
It's also just because he's in Canada. Like, he's just there. Like... No one pays too much attention.
Yes. he's not good right now.
No.
All right. Speaking of Canada.
Okay.
Where are you going to go with this?
Yeah.
The New York Knicks look likely to...
No, that's America, Ogun. America.
Near the border, relatively close to the border.
You going
to
let me go with it?
No.
Yeah, no, leave.
I'm like the Segway King. Okay. I think that's what they call me, right? The New York Knicks look like...
Now we will.
The New York Knicks are likely... going to be in a position to draft RJ Barrett, a native of Canada.
Oh, yep.
Wow, that is a weak link.
It was the only link I had. Let's talk about the draft lottery.
That's what you want to talk about.
I tried. So this happened earlier in, it's a Sunday, so like last week. And this was really, really exciting. The whole disincentivizing teams from tanking by giving the top three picks 14%, was in like the bottom three teams. A 14% chance of getting that number one pick, and then
I just watched so many numbers in your head right there, and it was great.
I did general maths, so and watching and then having all of those chances spread across the 14 teams too, that made this really, really interesting, and it made for a result that no one was really expecting, because we all thought, oh, is Zion going to be in New York? Is he going to be in Phoenix? Is he going to be in Cleveland? Mm. Nope, Zion more than likely will be in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Which just adds a whole lot more drama to a situation that definitely didn't need it.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing was the week prior and the pre-draft lottery show, where they're essentially acting like Zion to New York was like this given.
Yeah.
And which is bizarre when you actually look at the odds. New York had a 14% chance of winning the lottery.
An 86% chance of not getting it.
Exactly. But for some reason, I don't know, they maybe thought what every other NBA fan thought, that like, the NBA was going to find a way to get Zion to New York.
Just because this one wasn't rigged doesn't mean the other ones.
Well, I mean, who says it wasn't?
Who says this was not rigged?
The tinfoil hat conspiracy would say that with the NBA knowing that AD was going out the door, they needed to make New Orleans a viable NBA franchise. How do you do that? By bringing in the most hyped college product since
Not to mention the Lakers jumping seven spots.
That's a good question. Most hyped college product since Grant Hill?
Potentially ever.
Potentially ever.
Yeah.
Grant Hill had big raps, man. But Okay, on what's not a conspiracy, Zion's father actually went on record to say that he's happy to go to New Orleans, and he's going to make the best of it. Mm. He had something in his press release or his interview saying that he's taught Zion to control what he can control and let everything else just like do your best about that, the things that are out of your control, which is, it was really good to hear. So Zion looks like he's going to hit the ground running there. Oggs, I'll ask you this. Do you think that there's a chance that given how good Zion is and the attitude he has towards going down south to New Orleans, does that mean AD is more likely, or is there a chance AD stays now?
No.
I agree.
There's like a 2% chance he stays, I guess.
Yeah.
If no one wants him.
So you're saying there's a chance.
2% chance.
Got that one in a million stuff.
I don't think there's a chance AD stays. New Orleans knows that they're going to draft this dude, Zion Williamson, who is not just the most hyped college player maybe ever, but probably the most productive and efficient college player we've seen in a really long time. So they're going to draft this guy and they're going to build a franchise around him, which is exactly what they should do.
Yep.
They shouldn't try and appease their old superstar who said he wants out and more than likely still wants out.
Yeah.
They're going to build around Zion Williamson and see what happens from it. So if I'm them, I'd trade AD for some assets. I want
to...
I mean, you look in New York, you look at LA.
Yeah.
Because you want some of those
young
assets. I guess
Boston, you could
look. You can look at, sure.
Yeah.
I think the picks are a leg up for those.
Totally. And the fact that the Lakers got that fourth pick is just such a big advantage for them. And so, you know, if you're the Pelicans, you're looking at those two teams and you're saying, I want young assets and I want picks, including either the third or fourth pick, depending on which team you choose to trade with. I want one of those picks, maybe another pick for next year, and go from there. I feel like that's the only way you can do it. And just lean on... You're not going to be winning next year if you're in New Orleans.
No.
But lean on Zion. Lean on the hype train that he is.
Yeah.
And hopefully he turns out what he's projected to turn out to be.
It's weird because I saw people arguing that, all right, well, Zion's going to New Orleans, so now AD will want to stay. Like, I don't see why AD, franchise superstar, would want to be kind of overshadowed.
Or this 20-year-old, like, the center, something.
The future of the organization is now a different athletic freak. Like, why would AD want to stay for that? Right. So I don't think his mind has changed. And although the Pelicans are claiming that they're going to try make things work, they have to say that because they want some power in trade negotiations. I think... While there were those quotes, I think, was it Jackie McMullen that was saying the Lakers, Gail Benson said, like, you're not going to go to the Lakers or we're not trading to the Lakers or something?
Yeah.
Was that right?
Yeah. I don't know where that was from. But yeah, it was before David Griffin came on, keep in mind.
Right. I think the Lakers makes the most sense in terms of the players they can send back. The only hiccup, I guess, would be Brandon Ingram and his health issues. I feel like if Brandon Ingram was healthy, I feel like it's a pretty easy trade to make as long as he's in there because he's a very exciting young player. For all the kind of talk around him, like I still think he's really good and has all-star potential.
So Ingram's thing was the deep vein thrombosis.
Yeah, it's not as bad as like the Chris Bosh stuff. Totally,
but it's scary.
Exactly. You don't want to invest in a young player who might not be able to finish his career. New York have the pick, but who are they sending back? Who do you really want out of that New York crop? Like Dennis Smith Jr., sure.
And then that's it.
Well, like Mitchell Robinson,
sure.
I guess.
Like you just add him?
The issue with New York as well, with the hype around the rumors of KD going there, Kyrie going there, how much is a future pick worth? Because if you trade to LA, if you trade AD to LA and it combusts or AD gets injured or something, there's still a really good chance that that's a nice pick. You send you get a future pick back from New York when they have KD and Kyrie. Like
that could be their nickname, KD.
KD. Jesus. You're talking about a pick that could be in the 20s.
Yeah.
Like,
You'd hope so.
Hope
it's in the 20s.
Look, if I'm the Knicks, so the Knicks have the third pick. So, you know, you can either draft RJ Barrett and go with that. Keep in mind, he was a projected number one pick before the college season began. He's a really talented guy. Or you trade that pick potentially for AD for anyone else, and you try and recruit. So if you're New York and you have a core that's basically Kyrie, AD, and KD. Awesome, by the way. You know, that's an interesting core to build around. You've got your point guard, your small forward, and your big guy. And then you go from there. Like, if I'm them, I'd seriously try and throw my third pick away to try and get someone like AD. And then if you're New Orleans and you can build a team around Zion and RJ Barrett, you know, two really good friends.
Well,
went to Duke together. Like, that's nice.
In terms of keeping Zion happy, come to New Orleans, we know you don't like it, but here's your best buddy. That makes sense. But we saw last year that RJ and Zion didn't really coexist that well. And now you're going to throw Drew Holiday in there, who is incredible, but similar limitations in that he's not going to be that bang outside shooter. And you got two more spots on the lineup to try and put a team around Zion. I don't think that makes sense. I don't think taking the New York pick just so you can take RJ Barrett makes any sense in the playing styles.
You know what I do really like? The idea of Lonzo Ball next to Drew Holiday in a backcourt.
Yeah.
I like that. Like defensively, who's scoring on that? like that's a proper shutdown backcourt. If they do a deal with the Lakers, and the Lakers send, I don't know, who else, Kyle Kuzma and Brandon Ingram, and yeah. that pick.
That has really to get like, it over the line too.
Hey?
That has to get it over the
line. I would think
the
so.
If you're the Pelicans and you have no issues about any potential Brandon Ingram injury, then that should be quite easy.
Yeah.
That's the number four overall pick.
Yeah.
Plus Lonzo, Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma. And then I assume they're going to throw in another pick and maybe Josh Hart.
But make that work.
Before we move on from the Pelicans chat completely, can you think of a more unimpressive 7-year stint by a bona fide superstar than AD's 7 years at the Pelicans?
DeMarcus Cousins in Sacramento wasn't good.
That's fair. That's a good comp. But AD's been a top five player for some of that time. Like some people would have had him in the top five.
And
I don't think Boogie was ever there, like bona fide elite player that you can build around that they actually didn't manage to build around.
And weirdly enough, it sounds strange, but I feel like Cousins actually had even less help than AD had in New Orleans. Like
so much less.
It feels like AD hasn't had what he's needed, but like if you look at that, the Sacramento teams and Cousins was there, it was a joke.
They kept on drafting big men.
but that's the thing, when you roll down the teams that were in the lottery, New Orleans has to be a good pick. He doesn't like the city. He doesn't like the environment that he'll go into, but you already have an all-star an underrated potential all-star in Jrue Holiday. You have Anthony Davis, a potential top five player, as a trade asset.
Randall?
He'll be gone.
Yeah, surely.
Yeah,
he's like a worse Zion.
The exact same player.
Yeah, and
is he on contract though?
No, he's done at the end of this year.
He's a restricted free agent.
Too good to be in at three clubs, three teams in 3 years.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah. Like he'll find his way. He'll be fine. Yeah. And then if you get the third pick, okay. Again, I still don't think RJ works with it. But if you get the fourth pick, you like okay, Lonzo's coming over. So who are you taking in that fourth pick? You're going to try and find a forward, right?
Sure. There are a lot of good forwards there. A lot of three men. The dude who dropped is Cam Reddish, if you want someone like him, just someone who can stretch the floor. But there are a bunch of good picks there. This draft has always been like top three heavy, and then maybe five picks are pretty decent, like can be good NBA players, and then just shit.
I feel like if you take the Lakers offer, you're trading down, surely.
Yeah, you might.
I don't know who else takes him.
I see where you're getting at.
I just don't know who takes an AD who's going to be expiring at the end of the season
if the Lakers trade, New Orleans now have that fourth pick.
Yeah.
You trade down, surely.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. Maybe. If there's nothing there they like. But I think Lakers would be willing to give up more capital because they'd be more confident that AD would stay for longer than one season.
And because they've got to be desperate. Because LeBron's going to be 35 in December.
And his window is so small now.
Exactly.
It's 1 year.
No one saw that. Ted just put up like a, I don't know what you'd call it. What is this?
I made a tiny little gap between my index finger and my thumb.
I don't know how to describe that. I was going to call
that
like
the official term.
I was going to call it like a little duck, but like it's not what that is.
We're workshopping.
I do wonder like how we're going to look back at this draft lottery. Like, in a couple of years, do we go like, and that was the thing that saved the LeBron Lakers? Jesus. Like, or is it going to just be a meaningless thing in the end? But like, the Lakers were never supposed to get the fourth pick, and this actually really does open the door for them to get AD in if they do want to trade off. I mean, obviously, they could wait for free agency, but this could be, I guess, a turning point of sorts for the Lakers if they kind of needed one.
Also, retrospectively, how bad does the Luka Doncic trade
now? Oh my goodness. So thank you, Harrison. The Hawks got the number 8 pick and the number 10 pick. That 10th pick was the Dallas one. So they traded Luka Doncic for
Trae Young and the 10th pick.
Trae Young and whoever, whatever that 10th pick ends up being, and it's not going to be good.
Unless it's Brandon Clark.
Hey, man, I back Atlanta. They've got their philosophy.
Who's the GM? Who's the GM?
Schlenk, schlenk.
Breaking news.
What?
That's our breaking news sound.
Do it.
Shams has just tweeted that Damian Lillard has separated ribs and is playing through the injury. I wonder who told him that.
All ribs are separated. It's not one rib.
So that would have happened last game, right? When where Draymond landed on him.
Yeah, potentially.
I remember that.
Okay, that's
fair.
That's just like
what timing?
Oh, no.
So almost as if Damian Lillard just texted Shams.
No, Damian Lillard texted his agent. He was just like, hey, tell Shams about that thing. And his agent was just like, hey, Shams. And he was like, you what?
Yeah.
He's definitely and separated ribs.
Shams like, eh.
All ribs okay. are separated, right? okay, that means nothing.
Yep.
Just
wanted to.
All right, so I guess Harris and I are going to be wrong about our Warriors in five pick. Is that what that means?
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah.
God damn it. So, yeah, Atlanta is that trade's not going to – look, Trae Young is a great player.
Sure.
And he's shown that he can be the future point guard for that franchise.
Except Luka Doncic also could have been the future point guard for that franchise.
That is true. Luka Doncic will be the rookie of the year, without question.
Yes. Here's a question. Is this a good thing? Like, is this whole revised odds thing so that no one is really incentivized tanking, is this good?
Yes.
Yes?
I think it's – You don't want to tank because you know that if you tank like the Phoenix Suns did or the Knicks did or the Cavs did, you might get either the third, fifth, or sixth pick.
Here's my counter to that, though, number one, right? Say you aren't a big market team and you do just suck.
Mm-hmm.
It does make it harder for the idea of the NBA draft of the worst teams getting the best pick so that they can start competing again. That does make it a little bit hard.
Which is the point of a draft.
Right. If you finish with the worst record but you end up with the fifth pick, like...
But the counter to that is Philly, right? No one wants to see a repeat of what Philly did over the course of 5 or 6 years. And the one thing that could see the NBA change it yet again, because they change this all the time, man, the odds, they do it all the time. But one thing that could change it again is if a team that's hovering around ninth decide to tank. You know, like the Clippers, we thought the Clippers might do that this year. Thankfully, they didn't. They doubled down and said, we're going to go to the playoffs without Tobias and try our best and took two games off the Warriors, which was great. But if a team that's in eighth or ninth decide to tank because they have a legitimate chance to move up into the top four or five.
So I think it's the opposite, though, because I think, look what the Lakers did this year. So the Lakers tried to tank, and yeah, I get it. They got the fourth pick. But they had the 11th, 10th or 11th chance of getting that number one pick?
Yeah.
Now, if they tried to make the playoffs, there's a good chance they're in a similar spot because they were still a trash team. But it's like, it gives you incentive to keep trying to make the playoffs.
There's no chance they get the fourth pick, though, if they make the playoffs.
I think so. Just because, look, they had a 2% chance of getting that number one pick.
Yeah, but you're not in the lottery.
You're not in the lottery if you're in the playoffs.
But no, but that's the thing, though. You either make the playoffs or if you just miss the playoffs, you still have a chance of getting a decent pick in the lottery.
Okay.
I think
that's what I'm saying. A team could tank to intentionally miss the playoffs. But that's when you got to try.
But I'm saying you don't need to tank. Sorry, Harrison. You don't need to tank in order to get a good pick in the lottery because of this new system, which is more spread out. So you could really try to make the playoffs, just miss out, and still have a good chance of getting a good pick.
I think what Ted's argument is heading towards is that everyone will be more competitive from the get-go, but then when teams see that they are slipping down, then they'll start shutting players down like the Lakers did. So maybe from game 70 to game 82, it doesn't matter anymore because I think some of those bigger teams might start pulling them, and I think that'll happen with the veteran teams. I don't think there's anything that'll stop that. But I think what happened with the Clippers is the difference between getting a slightly higher pick and giving SGA playoff experience against the best team in basketball is light years difference. I think I'd rather have SGA, I'd rather have Harrell, Lou Williams, Patrick Beverley coming out and proving that the Clippers is a really good destination to be.
Yeah.
I think that's more important than tanking. But I think also what the even odds will do, flattened odds will do, is hopefully, which will be good for the NBA, is that scouts start looking at their teams more structurally and who they draft, in going, okay, we could be anywhere between 4 and 14. Let's look for the guy who fits into our team the best, rather than let's just take the best talent on the board, which you see time and time again with these shit teams. They just take whoever's best and then they just rebuild again. And it's like, okay, we've been going down a 3-year rebuild with Devin Booker. We just take the next best player and then we start our rebuild again.
Yeah.
I think with the flattened odds, hopefully teams will start looking and saying, we need, if Milwaukee was somehow on this list or if a team that needs 3-point shooters is on that list, they start looking at that player, which will give them that defensive edge, will give them that edge on rebounding, will give them that edge on shooting threes.
They look for fit over talent.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Which I think is only a good thing, and it will only make more teams competitive in the long run for the title.
Well, it's interesting you bring up Devin Booker, because I kind of I wanted to run something by you guys, a potential trade, right?
Do it.
With Memphis getting the second pick, the assumption is they're taking Ja Morant, right?
Yeah.
Which leaves Mike Conley in a situation where a lot of people don't think he's going to stay in Memphis. If you're Phoenix, do you try do something with that sixth pick, considering you have your Devin Booker and your DeAndre Ayton, you have your young players, you've been drafting in the top 10 for what feels like an eternity and you've kind of failed, but you've got like two legitimate young guys that are good. You don't have a point guard. Obviously, Terry Rozier wants to leave Boston, and that's an opportunity. But do you do something with that sixth pick to try to get Mike Conley out of Memphis? Would you? Given something you'd be interested in?
So the salaries would probably match up, because Mike Conley's on a big-ass contract, and Booker recently signed an extension. So that would work from a, like, at least from a number standpoint.
Wait, you're...
No, I'm not.
You're bringing...
Who are you trading?
You're bringing Conley in for, like, the sixth pick.
And, you'd find...
Jackson Bridges... TJ Warren.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Yeah, like you'd have to fill the other side, but it's essentially so that Phoenix can just get Mike Conley.
And that's taken into consideration that Memphis are going to get the other point guard, Morant.
Right? Yeah, which I think is being reported as like almost a done deal.
Jonathan Gavoni reported that they're eyeing him, right?
Yeah, he's like, from all reports, I didn't watch much NCAA this year, but he's a similar player to a young Conley, right? Athletic. Can't shoot the three yet, but we assume he'll get better at it.
Think of like a De'Aaron Fox.
Okay.
Like baby Russell Westbrook.
Mike Conley with Russell Westbrook tendencies.
Super athletic. Yeah, okay.
So just Russell Westbrook.
So you've got to draft him by the sounds of it. Given Conley's age, what is he, 32, I think?
31.
Okay, 31. So that's still three good years left as well.
He's a good, reliable point guard.
Yeah, and it was fun, or it has been fun watching Gasol have a deep run into the playoffs as well. It's like, you've earned this, buddy. It'd have been nice seeing Conley do that. So maybe don't go to Phoenix.
Right, yeah. I mean, I've just like, I really want Phoenix just to get to a good point guard so I can just make up my mind.
On Booker,
Because I'm just like, I'm so like confused. I'm just like, I think you're incredible, but I don't know.
Yeah.
So I just want an actual ball handler next to him, a guy that's going to lead the team properly.
Is he slow? Booker slow.
Does
he just have a shot?
Conley has 2 years left of his contract before going into unrestricted free agency.
And what's that, like 37 and a half in the last year or something?
34 and a half.
34 and a half.
Yeah. And I think like that's fine.
I think
I'm fine to pay Mike Conley that much.
Yeah. If they can figure out a way to make that work, I think it like that's a win for both teams, surely.
Yeah.
And, like, Phoenix is one of those teams where how many shit wing players have we taken year after year? Just don't do it. Take the guy that fits with Booker. Take the guy that will now fit with Ayton. And a Conley imparting wisdom that, you know, he learned from watching Zach Randolph, Marc Gasol onto DeAndre Ayton, I think that'd be good.
So on that trade one, last trade nugget that I thought of, the Lakers and Knicks, should they look at trading that pick for a Bradley Beal package? Or should the Wizards be looking to offer a package around Bradley Beal to those teams? Because Bradley Beal showed that he's an offensive superstar at the very least.
If free agency wasn't red hot this year, maybe. But there are so many options in free agency too. I think they'll explore those avenues and depending on where they land.
It's like you look at your Klay Thompson and those sorts of players.
Tobias Harris, JJ Redick.
Yeah.
Do you have to give up capital to improve your team? If the answer is no, then you take that avenue. But also, if Washington come knocking, looking to get
which I
to move
assume
on,
they will, because then the next season is just they've got to give it up anyway. They might as well just go in complete tank mode.
You answer that proverbial door. He's easily one of the best players in that age bracket. He kind of gets lost because Washington is so shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really rate Beal. I only watched him closely this year because I had him on my fantasy team that made it to the playoffs yet again.
Humble brag.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's real good and he's fun to watch too, man. And people assume that everyone on Washington's team isn't a good team player, but Beal is nowhere near as a hindrance towards the rest of the team in comparison to John Wall.
Well, what a way to end. By the way, Tyreke Evans is out of the league because of drugs, and Ben Simmons is going to play for the Boomers at the World Cup. tune in on Thursday, I think. We're going to drop like a sneaky World Cup special on the Boomers because I think they're going to announce their team on that day.
Was sneaky. Ruined it.
Oh, sorry. So stay tuned for that. If you like us, like what you heard, subscribe, rate, review on all of the podcast channels. Find us on social media. You know where to go. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.